Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door.
I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know and they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Wait right there, Mr. Bonneau.
How do you know my name? I didn't tell you my name.
Hang up.
I didn't tell them my name.
They're all a part of it. They're all part, all of them.
Do you ever wonder about all the different ways of dying? You know, violently. I wonder, like, what would be the most horrible way to die?
It's not my intention to do this in front of you. For that, I'm sorry. But you can take my word for it. Your mother had it coming.
Mommy, I want to see the bad man fly.
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I just can't take no pleasure in killing.
Just some things you gotta do. Don't mean you have to like it.
Wait a minute. I know who you are. Yeah, but I heard you were dead.
And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm distracted. How are you, Phil?
I'm doing all right. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Everyone's Abe.
Abe, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. We do have another co-host named Chrissy from the state of Connecticut, but she will not be joining us for a prior engagement. Tonight, we will discuss a new film, and we'll do all the house cleaning stuff at the end, like we've done the past couple of weeks, so folks can hear our opinions right away. But we will talk about a little bit about some news if anybody has anything. But before we do that, Dark Discussions for New Listeners is a podcast that discusses horror, film, fiction, all that's fantastic, as I said earlier, but it's basically sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse horror, midnight movies, and so forth. We critique and whatnot, basically try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. And we do have a website. We'll discuss all that later, as well as some spin-off podcasts and things of that nature. But let's get into some news, if anybody has any information they wanted to bring up. Anybody?
I do.
Yes, go on, Eric.
Apparently, The Haunting of Hill House is going to get renewed for season 2 on Netflix, and apparently it's going to be an anthology, so I'm guessing it's going to be kind of in the pattern of American Horror Story.
Oh, yeah, a True Detective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Did not hear that news. Was that, how long has that been out?
I just saw a headline about it today.
Oh, very good. Let's see, what else? Eric, you said you saw a couple of films, like The Isle and the Liam Neeson film and a few others that people may be interested in?
Yeah, I think, did I already talk about Cold Pursuit?
You may have in last week's
episode.
Because
I saw it the same week, I saw,
The Prodigy.
Yes, thank you. I saw it the same day, actually, that I saw The Prodigy, so I think I talked about it before. Cold Pursuit is really weird, because it starts off being like your typical dark Liam Neeson revenge movie, And then as the movie progresses, they throw more and more humor at you until the very end. It's actually seems like more of a comedy than any kind of revenge movie. So it's a very oddly structured movie. I enjoyed it. It's not going to be for everybody. I did watch The Golem, which I enjoyed. I'm not going to say much about it because we might be talking about it later. I watched The Girl in the Spider's Web, which was fine, but I'm kind of done with that whole thing. So it didn't really wow me. It was well done, but it you know, just more of the same, and I don't think I need any more of that same. I watched a movie called The Isle, which, yeah, it was okay. I'm not going to really recommend it. I'm not going to, like, say it's the worst thing ever. I'll say it wasn't for me. And I watched on Netflix, it's actually a documentary called Abducted in Plain Sight, which is the true story about a girl who got kidnapped. And folks, this is one of the most messed up true stories you're ever going to see. So go check this out. You will not believe some of the shit you're hearing while you're watching this movie. And it's not like they made it up, because the people who were involved are actually being interviewed and talking about it. So yeah, go. I recommend checking out Abducted in Plain Sight. It's totally jacked up, but it is a true story. And then I just revisited Never Sleep Again, The Nightmare on Elm Street Legacy. It's a 4-hour, I think, documentary on the Nightmare on Elm Street series. So if you're into those movies, it's definitely worth checking out.
Nice, nice. And I got the 8-disc movie set of that, and I think that's on disc one.
Nice.
The Blu-ray. Yeah, so I gotta check all that out. I haven't really dug into many movies because I've been playing Far Cry 5 most of last year when I had free time. But it's a couple of things I've seen, Eric. I actually saw a documentary. I found footage documentary on Netflix, too, about a paper company out of Scranton, Pennsylvania.
You're a dork.
I got to tell you, Phil, I don't know why I've not mentioned this. I've got a student in my class who's wears some sort of office-related apparel at least 2 or 3 times a week.
That kid deserves a high five. Deserves A's straight across the board.
No, he doesn't, but that's okay.
Oh, he's hip.
He was absolutely hip 10 years ago.
Well, it's back, believe
when
it.
When he was 5.
I'll tell you one thing. They sell that shit everywhere now.
Oh, yeah.
In Boston, in New Hampshire. It's like all back because
of the
Netflix.
Yeah, you keep on texting me pictures of apparel that the Office-related themes on it.
Yeah, I saw it at Spencer Gifts. I saw it at Newberry Comics. I saw it at Bull Moose Records. I saw it's just crazy that it's everywhere. And anywhere there's cult stuff, it's there. Because once Netflix picked it up and started replaying it, I guess it's literally had a huge wave of, back in the news type of thing.
It's been on Netflix for like 10 years, Phil.
Really? Are you sure about that?
Huh. Uh-huh.
Interesting. Well, then
I was introduced to the show to begin with, and that was while I was still living in Ypsilanti, which was prior to 2010.
Is there any chance it went off the network and came back on?
I guess there's a theoretical chance it went off Netflix and came back on. That happens
because I know like Friends has renewed popularity because Netflix picked up the rights.
Right.
And so all the millennials who were too young to watch it originally have now binged watched it. And so Netflix has paid through the nose to keep that thing.
I think that the renewed popularity of The Office is just because Phil has been posting all over the goddamn place about it. And so now everybody's hearing about it again.
Well, the other 3 people in New Hampshire.
Besides The Office, if we get back to genre related stuff.
Hey, you brought it up, man.
Well, it was a good one line. Yeah. Eric, what did you say? You said you brought it up. That's what she said.
Oh!
I did see Alita Battle Angel at the theaters on Sunday night. No, I didn't get to see it in IMAX as I was originally going to. Yeah, it's a pretty solid film. If you like cyberpunk and anime, you'll really like it. Abe, you would really like it, I would think. The ending, unfortunately, is a cliffhanger ending like a lot of animes are, but also probably because they're hoping to have this.
Sequel hook, perhaps.
Yeah, they're trying to obviously make this a franchise based off of the amount of money it made, even though it did come in first place and actually did really good on Valentine's Day. It still wasn't enough that would make it noteworthy, but you never know. I mean, some films like Edge of Tomorrow and things like that,
Pacific Rim. Huge.
Yeah, they become huge on VOD or disc when they show up. So Alita Battle Angel could be one of those that, you know, does that. I would recommend people go see that at theaters. Special effects are pretty good. Story is actually pretty good. The weird eye thing that everybody was talking about, Holly Maciak, one of our listeners and Patreon contributors, thank you, Holly, mentioned that after like 3 minutes, you get used to it pretty quick, and it may not have been Holly. It could have been it was a woman, though, from our Facebook group, Dr. Discussion Podcast Facebook group on Facebook. It's not distracting at all, actually. So, not an issue. And I saw Club Dread. I think that's what it's called, Club Dread. That was the first time I've ever watched it. It's kind of a cult film now.
About 10 years.
I got to say, I haven't heard of that, but when you said the title, what I pictured was Sylvester Stallone wearing that helmet, dancing.
Club and Dread. It's been kind of a cult classic for a long time, Mike, but I never bothered seeing it. The disc is pretty much out of print at the moment. Who knows why? I was able to buy a third party for a couple bucks. And I saw it, and yeah, it's a high recommend. It kind of actually, even though it's comedic, it kind of reminded me of Friday the 13th reboot film. So if you like slashers, modern day type of slashers, it's actually fairly pretty good for that. But it also is a little bit humorous too.
Thought I tried watching that, and I wasn't that enthused with it. I may have not have given it a fair chance, or I may be getting it confused with something else, but
okay, yeah. I mean, it depends on your taste, I guess. I wrote a little 15-year birthday article on it for Pop Horror. So just go to pophorror.com and search for Club Dread 15-year birthday or something like that, and you'll find it. Though it could be one of the front page articles at the moment, but by the time people hear this, it'll scroll down. Pophorror.com. And that's pretty much all I got. What about you, Mike or Abe? You guys got any information? Oh, actually, I did. I played Far Cry New Dawn. I'm almost completed it. Pretty quick game. And it's pretty solid. The apocalypse world is different than Mad Max. Basically, after Montana gets nuked at the end of Far Cry 5.
Spoiler alert.
Jeez. Well, it is now over a year old. 17,
from the guy that won't even watch trailers.
17 years later, Montana, comes back. Obviously, it's the countries are all gone, but people aren't like Mad Max crazy. They're more community wise, though. There are a group of bad people called the Highwaymen, run by these two twin sisters that are pretty evil, and you have to basically work that out in this world. But the world is very, no, it's like, you know what it is, they decided to go the Chernobyl route, which is it's very lush and there's a lot of animals and all that, rather than the way of Mad Max. So I think that makes it very unique, and it's pretty cool. So there's a lot of flowers and things of that nature. It's kind of, you know what it looks like? It's kind of like Annihilation inside the bubble.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you've seen that movie, it's kind of that.
Watch out for bears.
Yeah, stuff like that, exactly. And that's all I got. So, Mike or Abe, anything?
Well, I've been playing a couple of dungeon crawlers lately. One of them is called The Darkest Dungeon, which came out back in 2016. There was a sale on the PlayStation Store for it, and with the entire DLC included. The best way to describe it is that dungeon crawlers are basically you go into a dungeon with a group of characters and try to overcome whatever challenges that are there. And get the loot and get experience and stuff like that. But this game twists that around in that it brings up also the hardships and mental fatigue of doing this. So you and add some Lovecraftian horror, so your characters go insane, can become afflicted with diseases and stuff like that. It's a much more, it's a very challenging game and one that requires a lot of strategy to manage your characters carefully. It's available, as far as I know, for all just about almost every platform. It's on the PlayStation 4, PC, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, the PlayStation Vita, iOS. So it's available on many platforms. So it's and at this point, you should probably get it for a good price. I also just came across a little something here that a sequel has been announced by the same developers of this, so another a sequel to Darkest Dungeon. I'm not sure when, but you know, if you have played this or you plan to play it, you know, if you enjoy it, maybe keep eyes open for this one here. And then I just got a graphic novel in the mail titled Kill the Minotaur, which is a strange take on the Theseus myth that is almost like a weird mix between that and John Carpenter's The Thing.
Is that an anime or...
No, graphic novel.
Let me rephrase that. A manga, I meant. Is it a manga?
No, it's a graphic... a Western manga. I mean, Western comic by... let's see. It mentions the writers from the Red Dead Redemption series.
Oh, okay.
And one guy who had worked on, I guess, another graphic novel called The Witch Doctor. I've just received it. I only read the first part. Once I finish that, I might have some thoughts on it. But aside from that, it's been that and some writing.
Resident Evil 2 remake?
That I played and I finished.
Oh, how was it?
It's a fantastic game. There's a lot of love put into it by the creators. They definitely show they put a lot of detail and a lot of reimaginings and stuff like that. But it's still accessible. It doesn't do the fixed camera angles or anything like that. But it does allow it to have the same spirit and characters and stuff like that. I would say that its only weak point is that. In the original game, you could do two different sides of the story. Basically, you play from one character's point of view, you can continue on for the second point, which would explain certain events to kind of connect everything together. That is lost, unfortunately, here, because what they try to do is almost like a tacked-on thing, which kind of creates more contradictions than any answers or anything that makes sense in the story. I think it was mainly to add more gameplay time. That being said, there's also a free DLC that the creators have been adding. And the game has a lot of replayability, and it's a lot of fun. And it's also built for speedruns as well. So if you want to challenge yourself and see how quickly you can finish the puzzles and get to the end of the game, that's also available as an option. Or if you want to take your time and enjoy the worlds and stuff like that, that's there too. It's a really solid game, and definitely one of the stronger releases for this year in terms of games, especially for survival horror. But we'll have to wait and see what the rest of the year holds in terms of that.
All right, very good. Mike, anything for you?
No, I've been really busy, so I have no news of note that I can think of or remember. I'm good.
All right, sounds good. All right, so I guess with all the news wrapped up, I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, what are you...
Wait.
You had your chance.
No, doesn't Phil have some news for the listeners? that we were just talking about before we went on air?
Oh, yeah. We're officially going to be at ScaraCon New England this year. And the interesting thing is that besides myself and Mike, Mr. Eric is joining us as well. He's coming in from out of state, just as I am and Mike. And we're all going to be there. Abe and Chrissy are still, working out whether or not they'll be there. But at least three of the Dark Discussions crew will be there. We will have a table interviewing people and doing panels, Q&A panels with the celebrity guests and things of that nature. There's also going to be a podcast award show. So folks who have podcasts, I know Holly Masiak does, Dustin Watson does, the guys from Horror Mafia Podcast. If you folks are all interested in the contest, we can get you details because they're going to have celebrity guests and directors of independent cinema and things of that nature be some of the people who will be giving awards for podcasts. Similar to, convention awards or things like that, that people would get if they go to film festivals, things of that nature. The Rondo Awards that we've been nominated three times, I think. So those type of things, and they're going to be doing it at the convention. Anything anybody wanted to add about ScaraCon?
It was a lot of fun last year. We are looking forward. Well, I am looking forward. I don't want to speak for Phil to seeing Anthony Thurber there again. It's a lot of fun. It's a small convention, so if you're afraid of crowded places like Monster Mania, this is a nice place to get your convention fix and rub elbows with guests without having massive lines. And there's always the after parties where, again, there's a lot of elbow rubbing, if that's what you're into.
Yep, absolutely. Eric, you want to say something?
I was just saying I'm looking forward to finally attending this thing. I haven't had a chance to in the past.
Yep, absolutely. And it's easy to talk to folks. Like Doug Bradley was hanging out in the lobby on the couch so people could actually go up to him and talk to him, and he was there last year. And stuff. So there's a lot of folks that are easily approachable. Me and Mike actually sat next to, our table was next to Lynn Lowry, the actress from The Crazies, among other films. And, she was a wonderful, person to meet. And easy to talk to. The guests are great. The people are nice, and it's well organized, especially last year, and the panels are all pretty solid. And some of the panels are still the ones for the lesser known stars or the people behind the camera, such as directors or authors, are attended even less. And if you're interested in those, you can really get a large conversation going with directors and writers with ease, if you're interested. So it's not just being swamped when Elvira has her panel, but which, by the way, Mike was the moderator for that. But for the lesser known people and the people behind the camera or the screenplays and whatnot, you can get a lot of time and get a lot of your questions in, which is kind of cool. I think you would agree with that, Mike, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but Elvira said I was amazing.
Excellent.
You may have mentioned it once
just,
or twice.
Just
or
saying that might that might be going on my tombstone.
Yes.
I had 20 minutes with Elvira, and she said I was amazing.
Oh, yes. God. Yes. Yes. Yep. I made sure
to
get a picture.
You don't need to know any more than that.
That actually is what she said.
Yes, that's what she said. Well done, Eric. Well done.
Nice catch.
Yeah, and Mike's not lying. I saw the whole thing. I got a picture with her and everything. So it wasn't like he's just making something up. Yeah.
And I missed two exits on the way home because of that.
Also, I've already pre-ordered 8 new T-shirts. So I'll be switching them every hour like I did last year.
There you go.
Yeah, the only time I'll wear the is
that's way too much effort, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I buy these t-shirts because I never wear them any other day because I'm like the preppy weirdo. So I use them at the conventions. Mm-hmm. And so I attend two, and that's it. So I have to use all my shirts, or they just sit in the drawer for another year.
So it's 8 shirts, which means a minimum of 16 boobs.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, most of them have like hot chicks with like vampires or they're zombie hunters or they're.
Your wife must be so proud.
Well, it's just, you know. Yeah, just, you know, horror t-shirts. So,
yep.
You know, so, good stuff. Yeah, you know, like Sonya, the
you don't have to explain yourself.
Red Sonya, the woman warrior, you know, that stuff. Yeah. All right, so thanks for the shot, Mike.
No problem.
Yeah. And Eric, thanks for the shot by saying your wife must be broke.
You're welcome.
So let's see. I guess we can get into our episode for tonight. So, Eric, why don't we... let everyone know what we're going to discuss tonight.
All right. Tonight we're going to be talking about the movie currently in theaters. It is a sequel to Happy Death Day called Happy Death Day 2U, number 2, letter U, just like Prince would have done.
Dude, help. I am tripping right now. I feel like I've totally lived through this day already.
Deja vu?
Yes.
The day reset when you died, right?
Yeah.
I might be able to help with that. I died 11 times. I was stuck reliving the same day over and over again until someone wearing a baby mask murdered me on the night of my birthday. Turns out it was my roommate Lori. I kicked her crazy ass out a window and killed her, which broke the loop. But now I'm living the better version of my life.
You okay?
No.
Oh, hey, you're up. I folded your pants for you.
No way.
Dude, did you hit that or what?
I don't believe it. It's Monday the 18th again.
Stop global warming.
I'm dead. I thought it ended the loop, but I'm back. Oh my God. Everything's different. This time, it's coming after all of us.
If you don't reset the day and try again, they're dead for good, aren't they?
So I'm gonna have to die over and over again to save all of you.
I mean, I guess you could just reset the day yourself.
Genius idea. Okay, let's do that. They like me, I want them to love me like they love pop. If I don't stop the killer, more people will die. Failure's not an option. Focus, man. My money on my mind. Got a meal out the deal, and I'm still in the grind. I'm literally dying to figure this out. A girl from Wooded it by,
and they ready to go. Okay, you're up.
I'm so done with this shit. My show brought me to I'm on borrowed time here. All my fancy things. What the fuck? My crib, my car, my food, my... All right, let's see what you got. We're in crisis mode, Tree. Who's gonna pledge Kappa now that we have a death curse?
That's right. Happy Death Day to you.
It's your birthday. Sorry.
That's right. It's a direct sequel to the film, as if it takes place right when this first one ends.
You can't really tell. Well, all the same, over and over again.
Kind of, sort of. Yeah.
We're led to believe.
It could be a couple of weeks.
As far as the characters know,
uh-huh.
It starts right after the first one ends.
Okay.
Yeah, I never saw the first one, but from the way they apply it, that's what I got as well.
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
It could be a little more than a couple of weeks or a couple of months after. You really can't tell, because she does... talk. She and the lead guy, the two leads, are dating, and it seems like they've been dating for longer than just a couple of days, based off of what I just said. So it may, and she kind of alludes to that they were dating, you know, more than that. But who knows? But then again,
well,
right?
They have been because she lived 11 days over and over again.
Right. And then, but then there's a thing where he says, she says, I'm your girlfriend. And he goes, no. And, you know, it, we'll discuss that. So yeah. So the, yeah,
we're already getting confused.
Yeah. Yeah, but either way, it's directed by Christopher Landon. Christopher Landon did the first, and he's pretty well into genre films. He directed Paranormal Activity, the Mark ones. He actually wrote Paranormal Activity 2, 3, 4, and the Marked ones. He wrote Viral, which me and Mike saw, the zombie film, one of Weinstein's last films that he produced and for their genres company. I forget what that was called. That was a pretty good film. He wrote Disturbia as well, which was a kind of a Rear Window
ripoff.
Yeah, exactly. He actually wrote this film here, but obviously it's based off the characters from the original screenwriter's film, which was Scott Lobdell, which I'm sure Mike knows, having been a big contributor in comics, X-Men and DC stuff as well. So Scott Lobdell, oddly, a comic book writer, wrote a horror film, Happy Death Day, which gave him only credit for characters based on, because this time it was actually written by Christopher Landon himself, the director. The stars are no one famous and no one that will probably ever be famous, because like a lot of slasher films, they never seem to, but they're good actors and good actors.
Jessica Roth has a chance.
Jessica Roth, Israel Brashad, Rachel Matthews, Fai Vu are probably the four leads of this film. And it's kind of interesting, both Rachel Matthews and Fai Vu had smaller parts in the first one, and because of the second one, they actually have huge parts in this one, which was kind of good for them.
That's what she said.
Oh, so, you know, so it's kind of interesting how, you know, people who luck into small roles in a film get to become semi-leads or secondary leads in a follow-up film, and so good for them. This is a Blumhouse production, but Universal pretty much has its name all over it from the opening to after the Blumhouse little thing. They have a second thing, which is a Universal picture, so I'm not sure how it works. The film made $9 million on its opening weekend, which I think this is fairly disappointing compared to the original, and I'm not sure the reasoning, but who knows whether or not people just didn't want a second one or not. I don't know. But it has got 67% or so good reviews. So it is a fresh tomato. And that's all I got. So I guess we can go around how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So, hey, let's start with you. Since you said you never saw the first one, though the first one was Dark Discussion's top 10 horror films of 2017, by the way.
All right. I didn't get a chance to watch this first one, but I had to make sure to try to get to the theater to see this one. Since Eric had mentioned there would be this recap, I was hoping that, you know, in case I couldn't get to the first one, which I didn't, they would at least try to, you know, give me an idea. And they do. But from the way the main character tree explains how things played out, and to compare it to this one, I get a sense of two different kind of films in their approach. One is more of like a whodunit meets Groundhog Day. And this case here, it's more of a focus on more towards the sci-fi, with the murder thing being a smaller part. I thought it was well acted. I thought Jessica Ross was fantastic in her role, and I thought there was some really good humor and some really nice little over-top deaths in her attempts to reset the day and stuff like that. I suppose that the things that were carried over from the first one kind of felt they were just slight
extra pieces, and it feels like a lot of the meaning and impact that, you know, that supposed that certain things are supposed to have only seem to really have would have had if I had seen the first one. Like, you know, like for one thing, they reveal who, of course, who was the actual killers in the first one. And the way that somehow the alternate reality is being handled and how I'm supposed to feel about how things could have been. And it's, I feel like there's, I definitely should have seen the first one just to kind of get a complete feel. And I wish I had had. That being said, that I still enjoyed this film, but I can tell even without seeing the first one, it's very different. It's very different in what its main focuses are. And, you know, as I said, I think this is definitely more sci-fi than horror. You know, the baby face killer is more like a side, tiny little side thing than the main, figure in the first one. So, it's what makes it a little, you know, a little anxious, you know, a little worried about tonight, because I wasn't sure how to really explain certain opinions of things on things without knowing complete details. That being said, I liked this one for is I had a lot of fun, but it's definitely, I think I honestly, once I set some time aside, I'll probably watch the first one and see how this remains in my mind in terms of my opinions towards it. It's fun, but you know, I don't know. It's kind of, I honestly think it feels more towards other genre than horror.
Okay, very good. I kind of forgot that this was coming out. And we didn't really mention it in our 2019 preview episode when we recorded that. When it was coming, I was somewhat happy to go see a sequel because, I like the characters from the first. So if it's going to be the same characters from the first, you know, it seemed interesting. Jason Lloyd from the Horrorphilia Network saw it, and he said he's kind of disappointed. But again, he's for slasher films and things of that nature. PG-13 kind of ruins films for him. Especially if they're slasher films. Other horror films, they're okay, but for slasher. Because he actually complained about The Escape Room earlier for being PG-13 as well. So,
well, that's not a slasher.
He's one of those.
Yeah, this isn't a slash either, so whatever.
Yeah, well, people thought this was going to be a slasher, right? And sure enough, when people went in, they found out that it was, like Abe said, more of a science-y, fiction-y type film rather than a slasher, like the first one. And so that, I heard, too. So I was a little bit nervous. The hour before going last night, I actually went to see it last night. I was already saying, "Oh, this movie's gonna suck." And so, but as I was going in, I texted a coworker of mine that I work with, Barrett Heisner, who people may know from the Facebook group, and I actually met him in Richmond, Virginia, on the way to Scares I Care last year for dinner, because that's where he lives. And he actually will probably be going to Scares at Care, so it'll be good to see him again this year in person. He said he loved the film, and he said also sit through the credits, because there's a scene in the credits that happens as well. So I was like, all right, so maybe it will be good. So I have to agree with Abe that it's really more of a science-y, fiction-y type film and not a slasher film or really that much of a horror film, and that the baby face killer from the first movie was truly secondary plot for sure. But I love this film. I thought this was a great film because the characters is what made the first film really good. And this one, not only do we have the two nominal leads from the first film, which we loved, but as I mentioned, the Ryan and Danielle characters become co-stars, and they were great in this film as well. I liked it a lot. Whether or not I care if there's a third, it doesn't really matter to me, But if it comes out and it gets good reviews, I'll go see it. But yeah, this could be a top 10, most certainly a top 20 horror film for 2019, I would think, because it is solid. And even if there's other films that could pass it, it's still a solid film. It's not like a weak top 10 or top 20 film by any means. Eric?
Yeah, I agree with Abe that it leans way more towards sci-fi than horror. This movie is absolutely ridiculous, but it knows it's ridiculous and it leans into being ridiculous. And thus, I ended up having a lot of fun with it. I mean, it's all sorts of silly, but it's an entertaining type of silly. And I enjoyed everybody in the movie, particularly Jessica Roth. I really want her to become a big star, because she can do pretty much whatever you ask of her. And in both of the Happy Death Day movies so far, she has managed to entertain me, make me laugh, and move me in certain scenes.
She's very versatile.
Yeah, so she's got some serious acting chops, and I would like to see her in more stuff. That being said, I think Happy Death Day, the original, was probably a better horror movie. They both have elements of silliness to them. This one has way more elements of silliness to it. But it's one of those things where they don't try and fool you into thinking it's not. You know, they're throwing out non-existent scientific terminology, and it's all sorts of fun. So I'm not going to call this a great piece of art, but I will say it entertained me thoroughly.
All right, very good, Mike.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the original. I thought it was a very pleasant surprise. I have very mixed feelings about this. Obviously, I have not seen a lot of horror movies this year. There have not been a lot of horror movies this year. If I had to take a blind guess, though, if I saw 50 horror movies this year, this might just end up like at 25 or 26. You know, because there's things I liked, there's things I wasn't so happy about. I'm wondering if that's because I walked in expecting something different than what was there. Which was, I was expecting a film more in the vein of the first movie. And this, as you've all said, has leaned very heavily into the science fiction instead of the horror. There are horror elements in it, as more or less callbacks to the first film. But it feels much more science fiction comedy horror than horror comedy. And I didn't really care for all the techno babble.
Kelvin won. They said that.
Yeah, so a little under 1 degree Kelvin, which means it was coming close to absolute zero.
Which is impossible.
Yeah, but it's just I liked the like with the Groundhog's Day and this film and others that have done stuff like it. You know, you usually don't get explanations for why there's a time loop. Well, I guess Edge of Tomorrow did it, but it's I thought it worked well not really having a good explanation or a good excuse, and it felt like it was just too long to get the story going, because you start with telling the story about the roommate who walks in on them,
Ryan,
in the first movie, right? Ryan is his name,
I believe so. Yes,
with the B.
Yeah. Well, I'll get his name, but I'm pretty sure his name is Ryan. Ryan.
Oh, Ryan with an R.
Ryan. Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought, yeah, you thought I said okay. Brian. Yeah, Ryan.
Right, so it's Ryan with an R. So, okay, so Ryan. And we get like a 15-minute story with him before the story really shifts over to her story and really get to what the story is about. And it's so much, I really kind of feel badly that Abe was not able to see the first one, because they give you such a perfunctory set up, and I won't say this it affected my enjoyment of the film, but it gave you such a perfunctory recap of the events of the first film that it's like 30 seconds. And yet the rest of the movie is filled with a lot of small references.
And, you know, that one.
Right, exactly. Yeah, right, yeah. That you're not going to pick up or you're really going to miss the pathos of her relationship with her mother.
Well, it is a sequel,
I think, to some degree.
Or Danielle, her relationship with Danielle, and things of that nature. Yeah,
and it is a sequel. But I think
the filmmakers are reasonable to assume that people watching it have seen the first one.
Yeah, but it's also, since you just spoke about the Never Sleep Again documentary, most of the Nightmare on Elm Street films you could walk into and watch, and there isn't that much continuity that if you didn't see part three, you're not going to have that much trouble following part four, right? Here there's a lot of stuff that I felt that was there that people would miss out on. I'm not saying they wouldn't be able to follow the film, you know, but
it's like Scream, right? The Scream films you could watch, but you would probably miss certain things if you didn't see the first or second or third or whatever, depending on when you know, if you watch four, you could still watch it as a standalone, but you would possibly miss certain things. And I think that's what you're trying to say about this one here, Mike.
I think it's a lot of things that you're going to miss,
right?
Personally, and things that I don't think, are going to resonate quite as well if you haven't seen the first film. I think she does a great job. You know, there's some several very emotional scenes in the film that really she sells very, very, very well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I just, like I said, I wish they cut out a lot of the techno babble in the beginning and kind of gotten to the meat of that story a little faster.
Well, to be honest, Mike, I like how you pointed out that Ryan, for 15 minutes of the film, was the focus. And I think I would have liked that film.
They did switch that up. But
I think I would have liked that film maybe even more than what we got if we had just focused on the new character, which would have been kind of cool, rather than switching
and
back.
And that would have been fine, too. But it felt like...
They didn't even get to the point where he kicks the little dog.
Yeah.
I don't remember him doing that.
No, he didn't, but he would have.
If only he had the chance.
Oh dear!
He kicks the captain, right? But anyway,
I was waiting for him to clothesline the guy coming around on the skateboard. But yeah, it's
and the guy.
It felt very like it was a very ungainly kind of introduction to the film.
No, and like, I think it was a twist for twist's sake.
Well, not just twist, but just getting to the twist. We have to justify the twist. We have to explain the twist.
Right. Well, and it also takes away.
And it felt like it was a lot of effort in the story, a lot of effort in the plot to get the rest of the plot to happen.
It also takes away part of the reason the first movie happened, which is she thought it was God's intervention or something like that.
Let's get through Mike's thoughts on the movie so we can throw up a spoiler flag and really get into it, okay?
Right, so I would say I didn't dislike the movie. I wasn't thrilled with the movie. I was meh about the movie. And if you saw the first film and you liked the first film, then you should know that it's the same characters. If you like the characters, you'll probably be more likely to enjoy it. It's a different style and tone and different flavor film. And again, if I had known that, I wonder if that would have framed my expectations differently and if I might have enjoyed it differently. But I would say give it a shot. But if you miss in the theaters, I don't know if it's that big a deal. I don't think anyone's going to say that this is one of those rare sequels that's better than the original. It's an okay sequel. That's the best I could say.
All right, so it appears that based off of what we've said, I think I may like the film the best, and Eric a close second, and then Abe is and you are well, you're probably the least, Mike, and Abe somewhere in the center, closer to me and Eric, I think, than to you. So all right, so it's a wide range of opinions of the film.
Yep.
All right. All right, so Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. All right. Tree Gelbman discovers that dying over and over was surprisingly easier than the dangers that lie ahead.
That's a terrible wiki.
that's what's written on IMDb. I'm just reading it.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough. Right.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. All right, so that's the wiki. That's our little synopsis of before we get into spoilers and whatever. Before we throw up a spoil flag or anything like that, anything anybody wanted to bring up? I do want to. I know you know a lot of you folks have said Jessica Roth was great, but honestly, I have to say, Fee Vu, who played Ryan, and Rachel Matthews, who played Danielle, were great. These people were, like I said, secondary characters, and these actors and actress literally stepped up and rocked this film. And I think, sure, Jessica Roth is great, but the supporting cast, including Israel Brassard as Carter, really make this film work because they are either funny or humorous, or you laugh at them or you laugh with them, and you love those characters as much as you love Jessica Roth's character. Especially,
that's not true for me personally, but I understand what you're saying. I particularly enjoyed Rachel Matthews in the sequel because she was playing the same person, but like
in an alternate
dialed 15 degrees counterclockwise. So she wasn't exactly the same, but the difference. But she was still the same person. It was really interesting the performance she gave as a different Danielle, and I found that pretty interesting.
Yeah. And she's smoking hot too. But well, she really is. She's unbelievable.
Proud.
Don't be aware of this. But you're absolutely right, Eric, because her character is still somewhat of the shallow person she was in the first, but she's more sympathetic.
She's not, she's not quite the shallow bitch that she was in the first movie, but
She's not
almost
bitch,
the shallow bitch that she was in the first movie.
right. Right.
Well, she kind of is, but
no, yeah, but in the first movie, she is because she wants to be, while the shallowness in here, it's because she's more clueless, I think. But
that's a fair distinction.
Well, I also wonder how much of it is a difference in her relationship with Tree, because Tree is a completely different character in this film.
Well,
right?
And also she's dating Carter. Yep. And maybe that's had an influence on how she acts too.
Right.
Yeah.
So I really found the most interesting part of the spoiler flag up, by the way, for anybody listening. I really found the most intriguing aspect of this movie to be that the situation Tree ends up in, which is not only doing a time loop, but she, because of this weird device that what's his face has invented,
Ryan,
is actually transported to an alternate reality. And in this reality, she's not dating Carter. Danielle is dating Carter, but her mother is still alive, whereas in the first movie, she had been murdered, I believe.
We never really find out. No, yeah, it could have been like a car accident, or they never say.
Was the mother thing in the first thing movie?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
The big thing in the first film
is that she and her mother shared the same birthday, right?
Yes.
And that they would always make a big deal out of that,
and then her
mother died,
which we never found out why.
Right, and I mentioned this in the review. I was kind of waiting to find out that the killer was somehow tied to the mother's death, which
I assumed he was.
Yeah, and it never played out that way. Right. But so a big deal of it is her coming to terms with her mother's death, that she's been a bitch and a half ever since her mother died, you know, and you know, so she's like been a complete ass to her father. She is a stuck up bitch in the sorority. And part of the whole Happy Death Day thing is that when she's trying to find out who's the killer, who could want to kill her, pretty much everybody has a reason to kill her because she's such a snotty bitch.
Right.
And that's a lesson for her to learn. And so this is why I'm wondering, like, if she's not a snotty bitch, maybe Danielle, the head of the sorority, is a little bit of a different character there, because they have maybe a nicer relationship than they do in the alpha timeline.
Where I was going with that is that I found it really interesting that Tree ends up in a place where she's got to make a decision, give up, get your mom back and give up your boyfriend, or keep your boyfriend and continue to have mom not be around. She has to make that choice, and I found that fairly intriguing.
It's also the thing too. It's like, it's also the subject of having that choice and having that choice to say goodbye. And I think it's also interesting too because the idea almost seems ideal that you have her mother back and all, but it's more of an illusion of her living that life because there are moments where they're talking. And they're talking about experiences that she can never remember.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, because if the mother was alive in this ultimate dimension, in the timelines that keep on happening, there's all these memories that her alternate, that we never meet, thank God they didn't go that route in this film, had with her mother that she, meaning the Alpha or the A storyline, Tree doesn't have. And so when they're brought up, especially near the end when she's making her final decisions, she begins to say, yeah, I am living a life that really isn't mine. And then, of course, Carter discusses things about how if you stay in this dimension and don't go back to the A storyline dimension, then people are going to die in this dimension that otherwise could have been saved as well.
It's the same problem you have in the first film, which is that it's one thing for her to save herself, but there's other people who die in that timeline too.
Right.
That the other people are killed. So it's not just solve her own murder and find out who the baby mass killer is, but she also has to do it in a way that saves the people who die along the way. And now she's got that same conundrum here. She can save herself, but other people will be dead.
Right. And to be honest, the people, I mean, like Carter in this B storyline, like Eric mentioned, is dating Danielle, and they seem pretty happy together. And then when Danielle participates in helping near the end, you can see how she can be an endearing character anyway. So it's not like she's going to be able to get Carter in this new dimension and live the life she was happy with at the end of the first film. So the only thing that keeps her in this dimension, this new dimension, this B story, would be her mother still being alive. And yet, like Eric mentioned, Abe mentioned, a lot of those memories don't exist, and she doesn't even know what her mother's talking about. And then her mother also explains things in certain conversations with her when she asks questions to the mother, which help her make her a decision. But it is a tough decision. I'm thinking like would I, if I could have my life different where my mother was still alive now, and would have been able to meet my two little girls, which obviously she never did. You know, it would be kind of cool to be able to have her do that. But of course, you know, I mean.
Yeah, but what if you have to give up meeting your wife?
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. Things like that. Like, and maybe the kids wouldn't even be born, right? Because I wouldn't have met my wife. Because she says an interesting thing, the mother, which is, how do you know dad was the right man? And she says, well, I didn't. I just took a chance and everything worked out. And because of him, I have you. You know, and go on, Mike.
Yeah, my only problem with that, and you're right, it seems to be a difficult thing. I'm of the impression that, because I thought he said it was October 19th, right, in the film. I might be wrong about that. So I'm of the impression that this film starts one day after what happened before. And I might be wrong about that. But I never got the sense, it's sort of that horror movie trope of, I've known you for about 30 minutes, but I'm going to risk my life to save yours. You know, like you're the most precious thing in the world to me, as opposed to, shit, I don't know this dumb bitch, let her go. Here, she's going to lose her mom. This isn't necessarily, she's a guy that she just met that she's okay, she's infatuated with. But, you know, you're 21 years old. How many dates have you had? Especially if you're a hot girl like that. I'm sure she's had plenty of guys. You know, she might dump him in a week or he might dump her. They might end up really hating each other. So it's not like you're in a position with your wife where you have two children. But if this was, you've met your wife, you've known her for a week, you can dump her and have your mother back, I'm thinking you would dump her. You know, just because the potential isn't a reality. It's just somebody you just met.
Right. Well, for her, she's known Carter for months because she kept on reliving week after, you know, day after day after day. And she says it's been like weeks and months. So for her, you're
right.
She
said it was 11 days.
No. She said, I've known all you people for weeks and months. She says that later in the film.
Oh, right. Well, because now she's got the second round, but she was only dating him for 11 days or like in a relationship her first time.
Right. But my point, my point was, is that for her, she's already determined that this guy is a wonderful human being as a person because she's known him for so long. Similar to like Tom Cruise's character with Emily Blunt's character.
Right. Okay.
You know, but it may not be the other way around because in that movie, Emily Blunt only knew him, you know, for a few hours or days. In this movie, the same thing. Carter only knows her for a few days. So you're absolutely right. He could dump her at any moment if he finds, you know, but I don't see her dumping him, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get it. I'm just saying, you know, even so, it's still been months, right? Even if you had known Joanna for 6 months.
Yeah.
Right? Which still seems on the far end, because it seems to me that she's known him because she's got this thing of dying again and again and again is having some internal trauma.
Yep.
Which is a storyline that I don't think they ever really satisfactorily address in either film.
Well, but there's also a factor that she doesn't belong in the other timeline.
That's true. Yeah.
But I'm just saying it's, you know, so even if it's been, let's say you're with your wife for a month, you would still, I think, give up that relationship to save your mother's life, to bring her back from the dead. I'm thinking. So I understand, and that's kind of her decision at first. And then you understand her decision to go the other way. And right, she is not killing her mother. Her mother is dead. This is somebody else's mother that she has. And that's kind of like why I appreciated them going through the memories that she's never really experienced.
Mm-hmm.
That what she's living is kind of a lie. So I kind of appreciated that. But it is a tough dilemma. But I think the first out is like, I think it makes perfect sense that she says, yes, I'm going to stick with my mother. Until she finds out her mother is not really her mother.
Mm-hmm. No, and I found that to be the most interesting part of the story.
Yeah. The scenes between them were very well done, you know. It felt very natural. And, you know, so, you know, as much as I love the humor, I thought the human elements are really solid.
And when she comes in, she has two great scenes. When she first sees her mother, because she's not expecting it, right? So one thing I will say, I felt so bad for her because I don't think it's a coincidence that the Groundhog's Day genre started with Groundhog's Day in, what was that, 1991 or 1993, something in that neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
Because the video game generation had to grow up and start writing movies.
Right.
Right. I died, I've got to run the Mario level, you know, 1.3 again, whatever it is. You got to keep going, do it again and again and again. So we have that experience of what did you learn and do it again and then apply it to a real world setting. She just made it through the final boss, beat the boss.
Right.
And then deleted her save or something.
Yeah.
Well, it's
so,
not even the same game, though.
But even just like her first time through, because she doesn't realize it's another universe until she right away. Right. So think about, she just had this cathartic breakthrough with her father. And now she's back at ground zero again, or back at step one. You know, she's got to explain to the love of her life again that he's the love of her life. She's got right. Every time she's finally made it.
And just the cosmic reset button.
Oh, the best part was how she found out she was in an alternate dimension when Danielle comes over and kisses Carter and they stop playing the cow off. That was hilarious.
That was pretty funny.
The thing about all that is that, yeah, she has to relive everything over. So, I mean, eventually, I think it would become defeated, but obviously because it's only a 2-hour movie, whether it was Groundhog Day or this or Edge of Tomorrow, you just, you know, it doesn't feel as bad for us. But for someone like them, where she would have to re-explain over and over and over the...
Well, she does commit suicide several times.
Yes. Yeah. And numerous gruesome ways.
Yep. And the bikini skydiving was pretty cool.
I just love how she's right in front of the two.
Right. That could happen.
Yeah, right.
Good aim, I guess. Good timing.
Yeah, right. And giving them the middle fingers.
I liked the facet of the movie where they have to figure out scientifically how to get this device to undo what they've done, but they're in a time loop, so they can't write anything down.
Right.
They have to rely on her memory. So this poor girl, who I'm guessing is not known for her academic prowess,
probably not.
So suddenly has to start memorizing all this scientific stuff, so they can make progress on it. And I particularly liked a point in the movie where she's looped around and she's standing in front of a whiteboard and she's just like drawn out 18 really complex mathematical equations on her whiteboard and it just turns around and goes boom and drops the marker.
But you know what's funny? She probably doesn't understand any of those.
No, but she just memorized it.
Yeah, memorized it. Like people who, you know, memorize foreign languages for a film to pretend they are, you know, from a different country. I have to say that one thing that kind of ruined the coolness about the first, if that is even possible, is that she finds out that her loop was all because of bad luck, because of a science project and not the true supernatural thing that she thought it was that would turn her into a better person from the first. So it is interesting how they rewrote that to...
Well, let's not forget that it wasn't really that in the first movie. She thought it was, mm-hmm. and then she did all these things to make herself a better person. That still wasn't it.
That's true.
Turned out it was her roommate.
That's true, too. You're right. Yeah, good point. Yeah, all right. That's a good point. Now, let's see.
How'd you guys feel about the roommate in this movie?
Oh yeah, that was interesting. I was tempted to say, scream, you know, in my mind, say kill her,
right?
Because if she's able to kill in the alternate dimension, there's obviously some sort of mental flaw in her being. And so I'm thinking you might as well just take her out because
it's funny. I was honestly thinking when she went into the dorms, I thought she was actually going to go up the stairs and throw her out the window or something.
Yeah, that's what she does in the first movie. That's how she.
That's how she would try Eddie. Like, oops, that didn't work.
Yeah, that's how she gets out of the loop in the first movie, where she kills the murderer, which was the girl, and they fight and in their own co dorm room, and he throws, and so that's what, yeah, that would have been hilarious if they did that. Eric, when Andy comes in and Dwight sprays him with the mace because it's like Roy.
Uh-huh.
Come on, Eric, this is great. The uh-huh. office, dude. The office.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
You're right. There's that potential. She's a potential murderer. On the other hand, we don't know why this timeline is different. So we don't know how different this roommate is from her real self.
Right.
Right. Because
Danielle
case,
is completely different, right?
Right. So, well,
Well, there's that one scene in the hospital where everything turns out to be different, and it's like, whoa, wait, what?
Right, the killer is different.
With the doctor and all that, it's like, wait, what's going on?
Right, the guy is still having the teacher is still having an affair, just with the roommate instead. So some people are different, some people not so much. But now in this case, the professor and the professor's wife are murderers, right? Where they weren't in our universe. So when she comes back to the original universe, does she now get to murder those two too? I think that's
a fair point, Mike.
Yeah, I think that's the way you don't want to go down.
Yeah, you're right. Because in the first universe, the A universe, they're not murderers. Though if you watch an extra on the DVD, they have the wife a murderer, a cut scene where she kills Jessica Ross' character in the first film at the end, and they cut that out and they re-shot the first film. So basically what happens is the doctor's wife comes into the hospital room at the end and kills Jessica Ross' character. And that's how the movie was supposed to end. And obviously the audiences didn't like that. So they re-changed it. So taking that scene out, you're right, Mike, the wife of the doctor and the doctor are not murderers in the first timeline. So yeah, you don't want to kill them in that timeline because they're murderers in a different timeline. So that's a good point.
I mean, he's an adulterer and a douchebag, but that's not a death penalty offense.
Yeah, right. There's no law against being a douchebag. It's just frowned upon.
Yeah.
Not yet. I haven't taken over yet.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's not that I would approve adultery by any means. It's not my decision to make a judgment on those people. It's who knows what's going on. So
I'll put you in charge of that when I take over.
There you go. See. So what else? I don't know. What else do we want to bring up? What other scenes were of interest? What about the blind scene? That I thought that was hilarious.
That was funny. That was.
Oh, when she was pretending to be blind?
Yeah.
That was slapstick going on there.
First of all, the line at the beginning, and I had to stop for a second. I go, that's not right, which was she goes, yeah, I'm trying out, Danielle's saying, I'm trying out for a play.
Did you know that Anne Frank?
I'm going to be in the Miracle Worker, and I'm going to play the Anne Frank character. And did you know
that Anne Frank was blind and deaf? And they're like, right. What?
Right.
No.
I had to stop, too, just like Carter, and go, hold on, that sounds right, but hold on, no, that's not right. Yeah, it's no.
Well, I appreciate that they don't spell it out too much to the audience, so if you're one of those people who doesn't really know who Anne Frank or Helen Keller are.
Which is probably a good portion, to be honest. Nowadays.
Right, because, yeah. I mean, Helen Keller was, I don't remember when she died, but she was in...
Well, she was popular in the 70s because of the movie, The Miracle Worker.
Right,
and the movie, because that was Academy Award nominated and all that. But people that are younger in their 20s who probably never saw that film probably don't even know who Helen Keller is. Except for, unless they look in the quarter. Because one of the quarters has Helen Keller on the back, you know, for one of the states.
Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, she was at one time the most popular public speaker, going back before movies and TV.
Right.
Right. People who were doing road shows and giving public lectures, she was number one. William Jennings Bryan was number two. And Clarence Darrow was number three of people going around giving speeches. So... You know,
and
so
I never even heard of the second two that you mentioned. Like,
William Jennings Bryan was a multiple time Democratic nominee for president, and Clarence Darrow was an attorney, and they're both famous because they're the ones who did the Scopes Monkey trial.
Don't know that either.
That's where they put evolution on trial in, I think it was Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
In the textbook, and it's and they were already big before that trial. That's kind of how I know that, because I know from reading about it, you know, that
makes me happy when Mike knows stuff that we don't, because he's a teacher.
Yeah, feels like I'm getting paid for a reason sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. But anyway, So yeah. Right, so anyway, right, I just thought it was nice that they included that. Something that I hate to call it obscure, because it's not completely obscure, but they didn't pander in explaining it to the audience.
Right, exactly. So if you're a millennial who didn't get it, we will
look it up. Or any generation that didn't get it, there are other generations that are fucking stupid too.
No shortage of that, yep.
Well, the reason I said the millennials is because, again, the people that are me, Eric, you, and Chrissy's age would remember the movie The Miracle.
More likely to, because of Wright.
Yeah. Mike, there's famous a difference between being stupid and being uneducated.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but there's also still plenty of stupid people in every generation.
Oh, and Eric definitely knows a lot of highly educated people from the town he probably lives in that are probably stupid as hell.
Oh, Christ, you're not kidding.
Yeah, especially if they're college campuses.
U of M, holy crap.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it. It's depressing. So yeah, that was a good reference too, I felt. And then of the whole scene when she joins in and helps them, and I'm glad they didn't explain how they had to convince her. They just show her immediately a part of the plan, you know. So they didn't have to do 10 minutes of trying to convince her and her going, why are we doing this? And what, you know, they just do it off screen, and then we see her already part of the plan, and she was really part of the plan, not just stupid in doing it, because she was, you know, she went for the key, she made sure the guy couldn't get to the door and all that. So I felt that was really cool too, and that was my favorite scene of the film, because it was funny as hell, plus it brought her character to the forefront of being more sympathetic, especially after the one scene later in the film where, I mean, earlier in the film where we find out that she may have had a minor affair on the side.
A minor affair?
Seriously?
They make out that, they basically make it clear that she was using the guy just, the lead for his cheating, for her grades, right? That he's basically doing her homework for her.
Oh, see, I thought that, but then I'm thinking, no, I don't think that's really what it was.
Yeah, that's really what it was.
That's what it was.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Lord.
Phil just doesn't want her to be bad because she's hot.
That's right, Eric. I will admit that. Yes. Absolutely. Jesus. Yeah, Danielle rules. She's my favorite character.
Well, then you'll be happy if they greenlight Happy Death Day 3.
I did like her one line when somebody was staring at her cleavage and she said, "My head's the middle one."
That was awesome. Well, that was in Dimension A, so it was where she's the bitch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but she had a good point there. It's like, hello.
Well,
I mean, obviously, you have to look. I mean, so she has to understand you have to look. But
no, you don't. But this is why I kind of wish Chrissy were here, because I'd like to know, like, do women just have, like, do they just prepare? All right, I need a list of like 20 things to say when a guy's standing just staring at my boobs.
Yeah, but Mike, you're right. You don't have to look, but It's kind of hard when it's like looking at a person's nose. It's right there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think I'll say this, is that there is the ladies who wear low cut blouses or tops. There's a reason why you're wearing the low cut tops, and it's not air conditioning, right?
Sure.
It's because you want people to look.
But they only want the people to look that they want to look, and everybody else shouldn't be looking.
Well, they need to issue a warning or something.
Yeah.
Say, you're allowed to look, you're not allowed to look.
They need to hand out passes.
I'm not saying it, I get that it's uncomfortable. I've got boobs of my own. I get it. I'm just saying, you know, when you put something out there, you can't put a billboard up and say, only my customers are allowed to read the billboard.
Right, right. There's a reason why a woman has a non-cleavage covered shirt at work, while when they're out clubbing at Saturday night, or if you're a bartender and you have the low cut, you know, there's reasons, right? So I agree. I see what your point is, Mike.
Yeah. That's it. I'm just saying. But nevertheless, it is still a good line, because we understand you have to have something when you get, when you accidentally attract the attention of the flies, you need to do something to wave them away, right? You need to chase them off. They're like, right. No, the dogs are coming around sniffing. I'm going to go get the fire hose. And so it's the middle one. That's the one I like.
I'd never heard that one before.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a clever one. Yeah, that was good.
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
I did see a screen cap of a Simpsons scene where Homer's staring at some lady's boobs, and she says, "My eyes are up here." And he just says, "I've made my choice."
Homer rules. Good for him. And you remember how he used to stare at his Flanders' wife's boobs all the time, and she always was uncomfortable before she died.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was like one of the running jokes in the early seasons.
Before they killed her off
because
they didn't like the actress or something.
Yeah. Speaking of Danielle, if there is a third part, it looks like she may be like a co-lead.
I don't want there to be a third part. I think this is enough.
No, but did you guys see the singer? Okay, because I know Eric missed it. Did you see it, Abe? Did you stay for the credits?
I did.
Yeah, so basically, since she's now back in Dimension A, Danielle's the bitch that she was in the first film.
Mm-hmm.
And so this group of people called DARPA, which is kind of
DARPA.
DARPA, which is kind of like, you know, NASA or something like that, comes in and takes all of them, Ryan and his friends and Carter and Tree, to a office building or somewhere. Basically, they're a scientific government thing, and they know that about Ryan's, you know, tool. So why they want to use it, whether weaponize it or who knows. And so they want to get information from them. And then they say, we need one of you to, or someone to volunteer to be the next guinea pig to do the time loop. And Tree says, oh, I think I know someone that would be perfect. And then we watch Danielle wake up one morning screaming.
So, yeah, just you know, Phil, DARPA is a real thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's a Defense Advanced. I just checked the name. It's the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. It's part of the Pentagon, part of the Defense Department.
Oh, okay. So there you go. I said weaponize, and maybe that's true.
And I like the fact that they go there, right? Because since they went the science fiction route.
Yep.
You know, with this story, whether I like them going that way or not, they've gone that way. You can't ungo that way. So right. It makes sense now. Now, of course, they're going to weaponize this technology, right? How could you not weaponize this technology? So I kind of like that. But I'm not saying I won't watch the next one. And certainly after having seen this one, I'm expecting if there is another one, to probably go even more in the science fiction-y direction and less in the horror direction. Assuming this is the storyline they follow, so Phil don't get crushed if they decide not to make it about Danielle.
Oh, they gotta make it about Danielle.
No, they don't gotta, Phil.
Then I'll be disappointed.
You wanna, doesn't mean they gotta.
Right. Right.
Because, I mean, well, look at it this way. They could have, let's imagine that they used the beginning segment of this film to, you know, as a teaser at the end of the first, right? And that we were going to watch Ryan go through this. Yeah. And in reality, only goes through it for 15 minutes, and then we're back with Tree for the next night.
Right.
So I might watch it. It might still be fun. Again, I didn't not enjoy this film. I just wasn't blown away by it. But I'm also really happy with this as an ending. You know, that I don't think they need to go any further. They've given us an implication of where they could go with it. I'm perfectly fine with it ending as is.
I was actually surprised. I mean, again, this one was more of a satire than the first. So when Tree was being a stinker and gets Danielle stuck in the new loop and is agreeing to work with the government, which is kind of illegal what they're doing because they're taking an individual that didn't want anything to do with this and forcing them to do it without their knowledge.
And they would never do that.
Well, that's the thing. It's that.
That would be immoral.
Well, whether or not the government does that, that's not the point. I was kind of disappointed that Tree would go along with it because Tree didn't seem at that point, even if Danielle, she was annoyed with, she didn't seem like the type that would go along and agree with an illegal activity that the government would do.
No, you die about 30 times, your morality may start to become a little flexible.
Yeah, maybe.
So, let me ask, do you get that nice montage of her committing suicide multiple ways?
A bikini, too.
Yeah. Of course you bring
so I knew you were going to answer that. I was going to ask, has anyone had a comment on any of the particular deaths, either one they liked or one that seemed particularly unfortunate, or how would you do it if it was up to
well,
you?
Oh, but well, before I bring that up, before we you begin, Abe, in the first film, Abe, one of her deaths, because she knows she's coming back continuously in the first film, one of the scenes, she walks naked in the middle of the campus over and over, because you know she knows she's going to die and everybody will forget that she was walking naked. So I mean you don't see her naked, you see like her bare back, but it's kind of similar here, why the bikini scene, I guess. So
I guess for a death scene, I think it was her jogging right into the wood chipper.
That was pretty
awesome.
Yeah, I think the worst one was the Drano.
Yeah, that one
must have hurt, because the other ones are pretty kind of instantaneous, you would think, because if you fall or if you land in a wood chipper, the pain would be maybe a couple seconds and that's it. But the other one must have been painful as hell, the Drano one.
That's right. Cool.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that I don't need to find a different way to die every time.
Just do the same way, you know?
Yeah, I'd be just as happy with a whole bunch of sleeping pills.
Yeah.
And drift off to sleep.
But after you've done it enough times, you might get curious.
Yeah, you might, but I mean...
Well, like, you don't want the pain. You don't want the pain.
In Groundhog's Day, and reading about Groundhog's Day, he was supposed to have done that for like 1,000 years. I understand being bored that way. She's done it for a couple of weeks, right?
Well, says you. I don't think it's ever explicitly stated.
Well, she says she's known them for weeks.
Yeah, so you're automatically saying that means 2.
Well, I'm saying that she didn't say months, so I'm putting it as probably there for less than 8 weeks.
People talk about pregnancies as 39 weeks.
I understand that. I'm just saying.
All right.
I'm just saying, going probability, and the fact that she's dying because of her repeated suicides, right? In other words, there's lingering after.
You just
after
don't
effect.
Have any sense of adventure.
No, I don't. And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I understand. Yes, I'm not going to lie.
Really do sleeping pills every time, or might that be that day you're bored and... Hey, let's step in front of a truck.
Yeah, you know, and I could get that big, but those are again sudden stuff. The jump, like I get the jumping out of an airplane one.
Right.
So if you're the type to jump out of an airplane, because it's still going to be over like that. The Drano one.
I'll give you that. That was rough.
And even the wood chipper, I would be afraid I might miss.
Oh yeah, go the wrong way.
Right, I mean,
right. Yeah, you don't want to mistakenly become disabled, whether you're mentally or physically.
Oh,
or,
that would
you
be know, awful.
You know? You want to make sure that you're done, right? You don't want to be brain dead
don't jump out the third floor window, because you could just end up paralyzed.
Exactly.
Floor.
Exactly. Right. If you're gonna do it.
Right.
So. Yeah, I mean, God forbid, what if somebody, like, she drank the Drano? What if somebody came along and, like, gave her emergency aid and, like, got her to vomit up the Drano?
Oh, yeah.
Which would then still cause serious problems, but it wouldn't necessarily have killed her. It just would have caused massive trauma to her mouth and her esophagus and potentially her stomach. I don't know exactly how to do this act, but...
I think she wanted to be really dead. She wanted to be dead at that point.
So,
yeah. Yeah. Actually, that makes me think of that scene in the movie theater at American Werewolf in London, where they're also suggesting ways for him to kill himself.
Yeah, there's a good one.
A knife, a gun, hang yourself.
Yeah, she never did the gun or the hanging. Yeah, that's a good point.
She didn't really try.
her wasn't into it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I give her credit. There were some good deaths, you know.
Well, the point was they were obviously trying to make the deaths funny. So obviously,
oh yeah.
So
yeah.
Why not do completely ludicrous and outrageous things like jumping out of an airplane in a bikini or throwing yourself into a wood chipper or what's that?
Car compactor.
Oh, did they do that one? I don't think.
No, I'm just saying. Maybe just jump right into one.
Right. Or like in The Office, they had the box crusher.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah.
Stick your head in there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like The Fly, right?
The
original
Fly. Just ask all your friends.
Right. Yeah, so that was an interesting montage. It was kind of, it was kind of sick when you think about it, but it's hilarious. Montage of multiple deaths.
Yeah. And they create a limit for her in terms of how many times she can do it, because we find out each time she does it, it begins to take a toll on her.
Yeah, that's what happened in the first, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, what I don't understand, and I don't remember the episode of the podcast, and I don't remember talking about it, if we did or not, but once she finally resets the clock for good, she turns it off.
Yeah.
What happens to all that physical trauma? Did it all just go away?
Right.
What's going to happen to her life? She was in shitty shape, and it's like inconsistent. Like she, like whatever reset number 43, she passes out and has to go to the hospital, but reset number 44, where she's died again and therefore had even more trauma, she doesn't.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I know I'm overthinking it.
Well, you've been overthinking this the whole time. Right. But that's a fair point. If this wasn't more, you know, a comedy and a slasher, you know, both, you know, B movie type stuff, then absolutely good points, Mike. Because yeah, I mean, when you break your arm, that crack will always be there, and you know, when the weather happens, you'll feel pain there because of, you know, bad weather causes arthritis and things like that to hurt. So you're right. It's like if she has all this damage that's now healed but filled with scar tissue, then yeah, it doesn't make sense that. Yeah, what's her happiness in life going to be based off of the health situation? So if we do overthink it, you're absolutely right, Mike.
I don't think this is the movie where you want to overthink that. Like, if you're – there's a great time travel movie. It was a low-budget film back in the day. Holy shit.
Primer?
Holy spacey. Yes, thank you. Primer. Where it really is delving into those things, and it's like, hey, if there was a time travel machine, what if it worked this way, and what if this was the deal? And they really delve into that kind of thought process. I think it's hit lightly enough in this movie that it really doesn't. Mike's right that it doesn't hold up to scrutiny, but I don't think you should be scrutinizing it.
Oh no, you shouldn't be. But they're the ones that make a movie that's basically a puzzle, right, to getting you to ask questions.
Uh-huh. Right.
So they shouldn't be annoyed, and of course they don't give a shit what we're asking when people do ask questions, right? But it's this is Gremlins. This is the what happens if he
animals
eats at 11:59? But it has sesame seeds stuck in his teeth.
And what animal can't have water?
Right.
Yeah, like Gremlins. Yeah, that's an excellent point, Mike. Makes no sense. If you're half intelligent, you go, that doesn't make any sense. Midnight and water. But
magic, and magic is allowed to do weird shit.
For this one here, the original film where she was getting damage to her body after so many deaths, I remember we talked about that in that episode, saying it really never went anywhere.
Right.
And it really was just, I think, to speed the movie up so she has to make a decision.
Right.
Rather than anything. And then they just took that and they used it again in this film here to similar process, I guess, because it makes them say, no, I can't kill myself again to reset the... Because that's what I was thinking, too. I go, just kill yourself again, and you can reset it. And mm-hmm. she goes, no, I can't, because if I do, I have no many more... No, I don't know how many more times. So it was really more of a... something they use to move the plot more than
it was a plot point to impose a deadline,
right? Exactly. To keep her from becoming Bill Murray and Tom Cruise, where she could learn a million different skills,
exactly,
you know, and be the best in the world at something because she's lived 1,000 lifetimes,
right? Exactly. Yep. Let's see. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up? Of note. Yeah, Abe, you're gonna say something.
It's tricky without knowing the context of the other one. You know, not having seen the other one, it's hard to really get a, you know, like,
then watch it.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, like, in terms of, like, if I was to try to recommend this.
Well, Abe, it's really, the first one we all loved, meaning like we thought it was a top 10 horror film of the year. So yeah. You should watch. You'll probably like it.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying whether or not I like it or not. What I'm saying is that if I was to say to a friend, you know, if I was to say, because the thing is, as we talked about the film, both films, you know, have the same characters, but the way they're used in the genre is very different. So,
right.
So it'd be tricky to kind of explain and recommend without spoiling things.
Well, you know, it's funny, in the first film, the Ryan character, which was a huge character in this film, was literally in the film for like 3 to 5 minutes at most in the first film, and that's about it. So his character literally was expanded hugely, and Danielle's character in the first film was maybe 15 minutes, if that. So it is interesting how they changed it up a bit. I mean, if you saw the first film, you may not even having watched the first film, you may have completely forgot about the Ryan character, to be honest, because he appears 2 or 3 times in
In the first movie is opening the door and going, oh, crap, you've got a girl here, and walking back out.
Yeah, and that's it. And right, and he does it like 3 times in the movie, and that's it.
Right. He's one of, and we've seen enough of these movies that there's always we'll call them flag posts right there. The signs that show you they're repeating the day over and over again, right? You walk by the,
right.
You know, hi, Phil, you know, that guy from Groundhog's Day.
Ryan was one of those things.
And Ryan was one of those various things that's to show it's happening again and again, just like the help save the earth.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
was one of them. And the pledges were another one, and which we don't see a lot of. You just get like 1 or 2 references to them early on in her new loop,
right?
And that's about it. But yeah, there's just certain things, and that's he was just one of those things. He was completely ancillary character.
And Danielle in the first one was really just a red herring as the murderer, and that's only her purpose was there just to be another one of the people that may have been the murderer. And that was pretty much all her character was in the first film. It was interesting how they built on those characters. And that's the thing that's funny about those characters from the first film. You know, they probably were hired at, you know, weren't, you know, fill in parts. Yeah, let's just get some couple of people, bring them in, and they get the part. And then when the second film comes in, they're already part of the film from the first film, and they're cheap because, you know, they're not famous actors. Let's just bring them back and they're good actors and have them have leading roles. And I thought that was kind of cool about this film. I think that was the thing that interested me the most about the film, actually, was that two unimportant characters generally from the first film who were probably just walk-on actors that got the roles became huge in this film. It was kind of funny.
Well, and even the mother, right, had to get a bigger part.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. That's a good point. Yeah, so she was another one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I
do like that about the sequel, is that it takes the world we had in the first film. I did think it was a really clever idea to go back to that first day and replay it again and again and again. Whereas the logical thing would be, well, it happens to her on a different day.
Oh, right. So
she's reliving whatever Monday over and over again. Now she'll be reliving Tuesday all over again, you know, and now she has to do it all over again.
Right. And instead, it's her birthday, the same day.
Right. So here, just going back to the first day and doing a completely different thing, I got to give him credit for originality if I thought the execution was a little ugly, at least in the first, you know, say 15, 20 minutes. But I'm blanked. I don't know where I was going with that.
All right.
I got distracted. The cat did something.
No, when Phil was talking about the rest of the cast, I do agree that it was enjoyable to see them more prominent. But to me, these movies are really all about Jessica Roth. And I'd be less inclined to go see the next one if she's not the central character.
Right. Yeah, you know what? I was thinking that too, Eric. But then when they had the 15 minutes of Ryan at the beginning of this one, I was like, this is pretty cool. I like this. And then when I went back to her, I was kind of disappointed. But then, you know, within 10 minutes of her story becoming the main story, I was into the film again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I could go either way. As long as it still has the characters from the first or second film,
so I'll find it satisfied. Acceptable if they make her a peripheral character in the next one, if it's because she's taking a lead role in a different movie.
So, and that's what by the way, that's what I was saying, is most horror movies, you get a clean slate, right, with every sequel?
Yeah.
So the idea that they're bringing the entire cast back and delving more into the side characters, that was a nice thing.
Yeah, if there is a character from the last one and they're around for like the first 10-15 minutes for the movie, and they usually die.
Yeah,
right.
Oh,
which was the Nightmare on Elm Street 1, 3, 5.
Oh, Jason 2.
Right.
So yeah, it was nice to have the whole cast back.
Yeah, that's what I agree with you, Eric. If the whole cast is back, even, and I'll even go further, even if her character is co-lead rather than the one focus, I would be satisfied. If it's all new characters, then yeah, that's kind of
it. We just figure out how to create another story, though. You know, exactly where could you go?
Well, we can see what they're going to do.
Where do we go now?
Yeah, but it's like, but you know, if we say, for example, we were doing Danielle as the protagonist, what kind of story could we do around there for Groundhog that doesn't feel like retreading things they're already done?
Well, and really, that's going to be the problem. It's going to feel like a retread. I think they got original enough with this sequel that it was okay. But now that they've gone there, I don't know where else they can go.
Well, that's what we probably thought about this one too. So I think if it's the same people who are behind this one and the prior one are involved in the third one, I think it'll be okay.
They've earned themselves a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I'll give them that. But they have not, so that they certainly deserve a chance to show what they can do.
Yep.
But I also don't think that, at least personally, I didn't think this was so good that I was just blown away and I just can't.
Well,
wait.
I'm not going to be sitting around on pins and needles waiting for the next one.
Right. But the reason this one works for me, anyway, is that I love all the characters from the first film. I enjoyed them, and they were all back for the second film, and they were all still endearing and funny and all that. So that's what worked for me. Speaking of another character, that role became bigger too, is the roommate, the murderer from the first film. She had a much more to do in this film too. So I thought that was kind of cool. They brought her a little bit up to the front as well. So I see your point, Mike, that maybe let me explain. Like Ghostbusters, the first Ghostbusters was awesome, obviously. And the second one, even though they brought all the same characters, the story was so horrendous, and some of the characters had changed their hairstyles and all that, made it like, and it just didn't work. But I felt the characters here, they were all back, and I like all these characters too. and the story was still enjoyable enough that it worked for me. So, let's see. So, anything else anybody want to bring up? Any other scenes? Any other particularities? Anything you think they could go with the DARPA group?
I couldn't imagine where they were going with this film.
Yeah.
I can't imagine where they're going with the next film. Mm-hmm. But as I like to often point out to people on the internet when they say, well, I can't imagine another. Well, because you can't imagine it doesn't mean someone else can't. In fact, there are some people who get paid a lot of money because they can imagine things that we can't, which is why we're sitting at home doing a podcast talking about the stuff those people make.
Right.
And not being the ones that are millionaires who make things.
Fair point.
So. Yep. Yeah, I'm not saying – look, and we've all seen our fair share of uninspired, derivative, craptastic sequels, remakes, reboots, what have you.
Yep.
So I'm not saying that they deserve the complete benefit of the doubt. But at the same time, we've been proven wrong enough, we have to be able to say, just because I can't imagine it doesn't mean they don't have a really cool idea in their head.
Right. No, that's true. That's true. We'll have to see. I mean, there's no talk at all that there's going to be a third one, so we don't even know. We're just assuming based on. Well, it depends on the box office, right?
Yeah, and I don't. The budget for this was $9 million, right? So it made
its money back already.
Yeah, probably because it's made $15 million, which was a disappointment, but. Then you take in all the other regions around the world where it's opened.
Right.
You know, and even if you go by the rule of you have to take the marketing and advertising, take the original budget and double it. So that takes it from $9 million to a whopping $18 million.
Yep.
You know, so in the first week, it almost made its money back just on the domestic grosses.
Right.
The first week. So now, yeah, the second week, we'll pull it over that. And then you have gravy on top from the rest of what's coming in around the world.
Right. Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. And then, of course, the VOD and all that when it comes.
And then
out.
You get everything on the back end. And so, God, now who knows what the budget's going to be? I think the budget on this one was probably higher on the first than the first one because they had to do the special effects. Yeah. There are more actors right involved in this and more roles. Right. You have all the actors before, but now a lot of them have speaking roles who didn't have significant roles before.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and if they bring him back for the third film, I'm sure this wasn't a film that they had signed like all the actors, similar to what they do with Marvel, or whatever. Where they're already locked into a contract if they do make a sequel. They weren't thinking of making a sequel, and then they have to bring the people back. So you could see that maybe some of these actors will get, a little more. I mean, there's
well,
still
this
not
is huge, why, but it's pretty much standard that. In any Hollywood contract now, they've learned their lesson, right? They got burned 30 years ago that if you make a movie, you are pretty much automatically under contract for the sequel. They don't have to use you. They can negotiate the price, but you're signed. I'm pretty sure like Rami Malek is signed for Bohemian Rhapsody 2.
Right. Well, if there is one, yeah. But, what I know, like, for example, that
Freddie Mercury?
What was that? What's that TV show, the Will Robinson that's on Netflix? What's that called?
Lost in Space.
Oh, yeah, Lost in Space. When that came out as a movie starring Mimi Rogers and William Hurt and all them, they had signed all those actors in that film to be locked into a 3 or 4 film series because they thought if that film wasn't a bomb or a terrible screenplay that it could have been the next, you know, big franchise. And so they had signed all those folk long term. And when it bombed, you know, there's nothing to it and it just disappears. But had they made the second and the first had been successful, then William Hurt and Mimi Rogers and all them would have already had some sort of contract. And I thought it was salary too, but you may be right, Mike. But they were locked in that they had to be in the film. And they
right,
wanted,
well, like
they would want to be
right, like so with the Dark Universe, right, the Monster Universe.
Oh yeah.
Right, is that you've got Johnny Depp signed to play the Invisible Man?
Sure.
Well, now that movie is shelved, but they're still making an Invisible Man movie. But because he's under contract, they kind of have to offer to involve him in the movie in some way. He may not necessarily be playing the Claude Rains Invisible Man.
Right.
But they kind of have to throw him a bone somewhere. Now, that might mean, all right, Johnny, we'll give you a part in this other movie if you opt out, if you let us out of this contract or something like that. There's all sorts of ways they can do that. You know, or maybe he just says, no, that's fine, you can go ahead without me. But if a guy wants to be a prick, or your lady wants to be a prick, they can do that too. Then they can really cause problems and legal issues with the film because they're supposed to have to be used for that. Right. But but also a lot of times there's no guarantee. They could be, yeah, we're going to use you. Oh, no, we're going to kill you off. You know, the contracts, there's all sorts of stuff that go with this. And there's a reason why they end up being broken. There's so many franchises that are stillborn now. The Dark Universe being one. There was the Golden Compass was one. Was it Aragorn was another one.
Yeah, the dragon one, yeah.
You could just keep going. What was the one that they came out like three films and the fourth one ended up going direct to video because they were already making it and the third one ended up bombing? It was one of those teen films that came out right after The Hunger Games. Was it called The Divide?
Oh, The Divergent series.
The Divergent series, right. Right, so that was
all three of those.
There were four.
Was there?
Oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, yeah. I saw the first, and I was
there. I think there were supposed to be four of them, and the last one ended up just going... If it's the one I'm thinking of that just kind of ended up getting straight to video, because the audience for the third one just cratered.
Right. To be honest, the first one was so bad that I don't even know why they even made a second. I saw it at the theaters. I was all excited because they say it's the new Hunger Games, and I'm a huge Hunger Games fan. And
yeah, so
and it's like, oh, this sucked.
Yeah, but that's like when every time it says, oh, it's the new Friends, it's the new Seinfeld, it's the new Office. It's like nobody ever makes the next new Office. Everyone makes the next new thing. That's not what everyone else is doing.
Right.
Right.
Oh, happy death day.
So, right, Happy Death Day.
Right, right.
Nobody wants the next Happy Death Day, unless it's...
Well, that was the thing. One reviewer that I read their website, The Horror, I think it's called, and I think they're out of Canada, but I forget. Anyway, they reviewed it, and they were saying that the whole first half of the review was like, I wasn't excited about this. Who wants to see another? No one was... looking forward to it. This wasn't a film that...
Where's
anybody,
the hockey?
No one was asking for this film, and on and on and on. And then by the end of the review, he said it was a pretty solid film. He's not looking for another, but he thought it was a pretty good film generally, similar to how I think you liked it, Mike. And that's the thing. It's like, is anybody really looking for a Happy Death Day 3? And I don't know if I'm looking for another Happy Death Day 3, but I'm definitely looking for another film that has these group of characters, because I like these characters. But, yeah. But
well, and that was the nice thing about sort of in the old day when you had players under studio contracts and you would just reuse the same cast in a completely different story.
Right.
You know, and there's something to be said for doing that. And you got guys like Kenneth Branagh back in the day, you know, for like five or six films, more or less used the same actors in every film and just did a completely different movie. So I wouldn't, you know, I could see them taking the same actors and doing a completely different story with them.
Right.
I wouldn't have a problem doing that.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I'm talking about the characters, not the actors themselves. I mean, the actors are all good. I like the actors, yeah. Especially...
She'll still be hot if she's somebody else.
Yes, especially Ms. Matthews. But I like the characters themselves, the actual characters that they play. So it wouldn't be the same for me. But either way, any other further thoughts anybody wanted to bring up?
No.
Eric wants to go to bed.
That's right.
My God, Eric, this is Happy Death Day. We love this film. Come on.
We haven't been talking about the film for 20 minutes now.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking about possible
Contract bullshit.
Possible third film. All right, so let's talk about some other things. So before
I think
we
exhausted what we had to, but yeah, yeah. Okay.
Let's talk about a few other things before we get into our final thoughts. Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, and Spotify.
Excellent. And Mike, you do a blog plus a couple of other podcasts with myself and also with Eric?
The blog is on Natural Selections. I'll be putting up my look in the year back with my for Oscar weekend this weekend, as I have the last 3 or 4 years. And then the other podcasts are You Know Nothing, Jon Snow. That will be returning in April. Searching for American Gods. That will probably be returning in March. And Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, which is about the Westworld TV series on HBO. That will be returning whenever that series returns, probably in 2020.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, nextscott.com says 51 days, 22 hours, 19 minutes, and 57 seconds until Sansa Stark.
Approximately.
Yes, right, because by the time people hear this, it'll be minus 7 days from that, at least, because we usually release it 7 days after we record it. What about you, Abe? Where can they find us on the web?
That site is called darkdiscussions.com. If you look at the right-hand side, you'll find links to the rumors blogs, among them being the ones mentioned so far. And if you want to browse around our site, you can find all the episodes we have uploaded so far for free to listen to. There's also more we have yet to upload, so stay tuned for some new ones as weeks go on.
And Eric, what else can people find on www.darkdiscussions.com?
Oh, well, on the front page, they can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that lets you support your online artists. You can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or to go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions for every $5 a month that you care to donate to help us offset the cost of producing this podcast. You'll have the opportunity to pick a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the entries and draw them on a quarterly basis. For more details, you can follow the link on the front page or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
That's right. Or you can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com. We want to hear your feedback or your questions and whatnot. We'll most likely read your email on the podcast. Also, find us at Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. We're on Twitter, Dark Discussion 1, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and at the bottom of every page of darkdiscussions.com, a link to all these things. Also, Anthony Thurber is doing a podcast that is called Anthony T's Horror Show, which can actually be found on the Dark Discussions podcast RSS feed. So wherever you can find our podcast, his episodes will pop up. He usually does a bi-monthly episode. This month for February, he's been doing Woman of Horror, and he just interviewed Maria Olson, a friend of our podcast.
Maria rules!
Yep, one of the great folks that we met through this podcast. And he has a couple other actresses that he's been talking to as well. Jordan Phipps, I think, was one that he did earlier, two episodes ago. And her film, Close Calls, is coming out in March on VOD everywhere. And it's getting rave reviews, I've heard. And I already pre-ordered the disc for that. It's been one of my films that I've been looking forward to for about 10 months since I first found out about it from the Horrorpedia website. I guess that's pretty much it. So let's give our final thoughts of on this film. So let's go and start with you again, Abe.
I like this film, even though I have not seen the first one, which I will try to do so hopefully soon. It's still a lot of fun. If you're going to this film looking for a slasher film, you're not going to find that. But you will find a really well acted and fun dark comedy, and it was enjoyable. I honestly still think that, you know, after hearing the good things I heard about the first one, I still think both of them, you check out both films. But I think it's also good to know that
you're also going to be seeing, if you go watch both, you go just expect a kind of very different experience when dealing with them.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, having not seen the first one, Abe, you obviously experienced this a little different than myself, Eric, and Mike. For me, yeah, this film I liked a lot. Like I said earlier, I liked all the characters from the first film, and this one expands on a number of minor characters from the first film into more leading roles, and those characters were all fun. I liked the film a lot. Just make sure you understand that it's not a slasher film like the first film. So if you're going in, like Mike mentioned, that he probably went in thinking it was going to be more of a slasher film, you'll be probably disappointed. But you pretty much got a feel for what this film is like based off of what we discussed tonight. I would highly recommend checking it out. It was a really fun time. And though it's not a true horror film in the senses that we would think, it's still considered a horror film. It may be my favorite horror film so far this year. And Rachel Matthews is the best. Eric.
I like this movie a lot. It is silly, but enjoyably silly. I think you should go see it.
Mike.
It doesn't suck. It's a fun film for what it is. It is not on par with the first, but right now pickings in theater are kind of slim. So it's this or The Prodigy. If you're into horror and you know, if you've seen one, go see the other.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Another problem with this film's budget, or I should say box office, is that The Prodigy and Glass were still out. And a lot of people probably thought Glass was going to be horror as well. So a lot of people who were going to see horror films had a choice of three films that they were going to. And so, and all three of them made the top 10 this week. So that probably hurt, this movie's box office a little bit as well.
Well, and it was also up against, the Lego Movie,
Alita Battle Angel
and Alita. So yeah, it didn't come out at the best time to be successful.
Right.
And exactly. But none of those films did as well as people were expecting.
That's true too.
Yeah, it was I think they said it was the worst box office weekend for President's Day weekend in 15 years.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's before adjusting for inflation.
Right, exactly. And to be honest, besides Glass and The Prodigy, Eric did mention Alita Battle Angel as well, which is not horror, but it's still a genre film, and people who would possibly like horror films would possibly like cyberpunk films as well. So there's a lot of competition for the same audience, and it is what it is. All right. So with all that stated, I think we can wrap it up. So, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Happy Death Day to you. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.